pop like my Uncle Toad used to cap his moonshine with. Mama always told me the real alcoholics, like my daddy, drink the homemade stuff because it's stronger. Now I know she's as much a fool as my daddy was and as Leroy is when he gets on the old crow, only she doesn't chase me with a frying pan. Miss Celia picks the bottle up and looks at it like Jesus is in there, and she can't wait to get saved. She uncorks it, sips it, and sighs. Then she drinks 3 hard swallows and lays back on her fancy pillows. My body starts to shake watching that ease cross her face. She was so eager to get to her juice, she didn't even close the damn door. I have to grit my teeth so I don't scream at her. Finally, I force my way back down the stairs. When Miss Celia comes back downstairs 10 minutes later, she sits at the kitchen table and asks me if I'm ready to eat. "There's pork chops in the icebox and I'm not eating lunch today," I say, and stomp out of the room. That afternoon, Miss Celia's in her bathroom sitting on the toilet lid. She's got the hairdryer on the back tank and the hood pulled over her bleached head. With that contraption on, she wouldn't hear the A-bomb explode. I go upstairs with my oil rags, and I open the cupboard for myself. 2 dozen flat whiskey bottles are hidden behind some ratty old blankets Miss Celia must have toted with her from Tunica County. The bottles don't have any labels fastened to them, just the stamp Old Kentucky in the glass. 12 are full, ready for tomorrow. 12 are empty from last week, just like all these damn bedrooms. No wonder the fool doesn't have any kids. On the first Thursday of July at 12 noon, Miss Celia gets up from the bed for her cooking lesson. She's dressed in a white sweater so tight it'd make a hooker look holy. I swear her clothes get tighter every week. We settle in our places, me at the stovetop, her on her stool. I've hardly spoken one word to her since I found those bottles last week. I'm not mad. I'm irate. But I have sworn every day for the past 6 days that I would follow Mama's rule number 1. To say something would mean I cared about her, and I don't. It's not my business or my concern if she's a lazy, drunk fool. We lay the battered raw chicken on the rack. Then I have to remind the ding-dong for the bobillionth time to wash her hands before she kills us both. I watch the chicken sizzle, try to forget she's there. Frying chicken always makes me feel a little bit better about life. I almost forgot I was working for a drunk. When the batch is done, I put most of it in the refrigerator for supper that night. The rest goes on a plate for our lunch. She sits down across from me at the kitchen table as usual. "Take the breast," she says, her blue eyes bugging out at me. "Go ahead." "I eat the leg and the thigh," I say, taking them from the plate. I thumb through the Jackson Journal to the Metro section. I pop up the spine of my newspaper in front of my face so I don't have to look at her. "But they don't have hardly any meat on them." "They good. Greasy." I keep reading, trying to ignore. "Well," she says, taking the breast, "I guess that makes us perfect chicken partners then." And after a minute, she says, "You know, I'm lucky to have you as a friend, Minnie." I feel thick, hot disgust rise up in my chest. I lower my paper and just look at her. "No, ma'am, we ain't friends."
"Well, sure we are."
She smiles like she doing me a big favor. "No, Miss Celia, we ain't." She blinks at me with her fake eyelashes. "Stop it, Minnie," my insides tell me. But I already know I can't. I know by the fists in my hands that I can't hold this in another minute. "Is it?" She looks down at a chicken. "Because you're colored or because you don't want to be friends with me?" "So many reasons. You white and me color just fall somewhere in between." She's not smiling at all now.
"But why?"
"Because when I tell you I'm late on my light bill, I ain't asking you for money," I say.
"Oh, Minnie.
Because you don't even give me the courtesy of telling your husband I'm working here. Because you in this house 24 hours a day driving me insane."
"You don't understand. I can't. I can't leave."
"But all that is nothing compared to what I know now." Her face goes a shade paler under her makeup. All this time I was thinking you were dying of the cancer, sick in the head. Poor Miss Sia all day long.
I know it's been hard.
Oh, I know you ain't sick. I seen you with them bottles upstairs, and you ain't fooling me another second.
Bottles? Oh, God, Minnie,
I ought to pour them things down the drain. I ought to tell Mr. Johnny right now. She stands up, knocking her chair over. Don't you dare tell. You act like you want kids, but you drink it enough to poison an elephant. If you tell him, I'll fire you, Minnie. She's got tears in her eyes. If you touch those bottles, I'll fire you right now. But the blood's running too hot in my head to stop now.
Fire me? Who else gonna come out here and work in secret while you hang around the house drunk all day?
You think I can't fire you? You finish your work today, Minnie.
She's boohooing and pointing her finger at me.
You eat your chicken, and then you go home.
She picks up a plate with the white meat and charges through the swinging door. I hear it clatter down on the long, fancy dining room table, the chair legs scraping against the floor. I sink down in my seat because my knees are shaking and stare down at my chicken. I just lost another damn job. I wake up Saturday morning at 7 a.m. to a clanging headache and a raw tongue. I must have bitten down on it all night long. Leroy looks at me through one eye because he knows something's up. He knew it last night at supper and smelled it when he walked in at 5 o'clock this morning.
What's eating you? Ain't got trouble at work, do you?
He asked for the third time.
Nothing eating me except 5 kids and a husband. Y'all driving me up a wall.
The last thing I need him to know is that I've told off another white lady and lost another job. I put on my purple house dress and stomp to the kitchen. I clean it like it's never been clean.
Mama, where you going? Yells Kendra.
I'm hungry.
I'm going to Abilene's. Mama need to be with somebody not pulling on her for 5 minutes.
I pass Sugar sitting on the front steps.
Sugar, go get Kendra some breakfast.
She already ate just a half hour ago.
Well, she hungry again.
I walk the 2 blocks to Abilene's house, cross Tick Road onto Ferris Street. Even though it's hot as sin and steam's already rising off the blacktop, kids are throwing balls, kicking cans, skipping rope.
Hey there, Minnie,
someone says to me about every 50 feet. I nod, but I don't get friendly. Not today. I cut through Ida Peak's garden. Abilene's kitchen door is open. Abilene's sitting at a table reading one of those books Mosquito got her from the White Library. She looks up when she hears the screen door whine. I guess she can tell I'm angry.
Lord have mercy, who done what to you?
Celia Ray Foote, that's who.
I sit down across from her. Abilene gets up and pours me some coffee.
What's she do?
I tell about the bottles I found. I don't know why I hadn't told her a week and a half ago when I found them. Maybe I didn't want her to know something so awful about Miss Celia. Maybe I felt bad because Abilene was the one who got me the job. But now I'm so mad I let it all spill out. And then she fired me. Oh, law, Minnie.
Say she gonna find another maid. But who gonna work for that lady? Some nappy-headed country maid already living out there won't know squat about serving from the left, clearing from the right.
You thought about apologizing? Maybe you go in Monday morning, talk to her.
I ain't apologizing to no drunk. I never apologized to my daddy, and I sure ain't apologizing to her.
We're both quiet. I throw back my coffee, watch a horsefly buzz against Abilene's screen door, knocking with his hard, ugly head, whap, 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 till it falls down on the step, spins around like a crazy fool. Can't sleep. Can't eat, I say. I tell you, that Celia must be the worst one you ever had to tend to.
They all bad, but she the worst of all.
Ain't they? You remember that time Miss Walter made you pay for the crystal glass you broke? $10 out of your pay. Then you find out them glasses only cost $3 a piece down at Carter's.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and you remember that crazy Mr. Charlie, the one who always called you nigger to your face like he think it's funny? And his wife, the one who make you eat lunch outside even in the middle of January, even when it snowed that time? Make me cold just thinking about it.
And what?
Abilene is chuckling.
trying to talk at the same time.
What about that Miss Roberta? Way she make you sit at the kitchen table while she tried her new hair dye solution on you?
Abilene wipes at her eyes. Lord, I never seen blue hair on a black woman before or since.
Leroy say you look like a cracker from outer space.
Ain't nothing funny about that. Took me 3 weeks and $25 to get my hair black again.
Abilene shakes her head, breathes out a high key, takes a sip of a coffee.
Miss Celia, though, she says, way she treats you. How much he paying you to put up with Mr. Johnny and the cooking lessons?
Must be less than all of them.
You know she paying me double.
Oh, that's right.
Well, anyway, with all her friends coming over, expecting you to clean up after them all the time, I just look at her.
And them 10 kids she got, too.
Abilene presses her napkin to her lips, hides a smile. Must drive you insane the way they screaming all day, messing up that big old house.
I think you done made your point, Abilene.
Abilene smiles, pats me on the arm. I'm sorry, honey, but you my best friend. And I think you got something pretty good out there. So what if she take a nip or two to get through the day? Go talk to her Monday. I feel my face crinkle up.
You think she'd take me back after everything I said?
Nobody else gonna wait on her, and she know it.
Yeah, she dumb, I sigh, but she ain't stupid.
I go on home. I don't tell Leroy what's bothering me, but I think about it all day and all weekend long. I've been fired more times than I have fingers. I pray to God I can get my job back on Monday.
Chapter 18. On Monday morning, I drive to work rehearsing the whole way. I know I mouthed off. I walk into a kitchen, and I know I was out of place. I set my bag down in the chair, and this is the hard part. And I'm sorry. I brace myself when I hear Miss C's feet padding through the house. I don't know what to expect, if she'll be mad or cold or just flat out refire me. All I know is I'm doing the talking first.
Morning, she says. Miss Celia's still in her nightgown. She hasn't even brushed her hair, much less put the goo on her face.
Miss Celia, I gotta tell you something. She groans, flattens her hand against the stomach.
You feel bad?
Yeah. She puts a biscuit and some ham on a plate, then takes the ham back off.
Miss Celia, I want you to know. But she walks right out while I'm talking, and I know I'm in some kind of trouble.
I go ahead and do my work. Maybe I'm crazy to act like the job's still mine. Maybe she won't even pay me for the day. After lunch, I turn on Miss Christine on As the World Turned and do the ironing. Usually Miss C comes in and watches with me, but not today. When the program's over, I wait on her a while in the kitchen, but Miss Celia doesn't even come in for her lesson. The bedroom door stays closed, and by 2 o'clock, I can't think of anything else to do except clean their bedroom. I feel a dread like a frying pan in my stomach. I wish I'd gotten my words in this morning when I had the chance. Finally, I go to the back of the house, look at that closed door. I knock, and there's no answer. Finally, I take a chance and open it. But the bed is empty. Now I've got the shut bathroom door to contend with.
I'm gonna do my work in here,
I call out. There's no answer, but I know she's in there. I can feel her behind that door. I'm sweating. I want to get this damn conversation over with. I go around the room with my laundry sack, stuffing a weekend's worth of clothes inside. The bathroom door stays closed with no sound. I know that bathroom in there is a mess. I listen for some life as I pull the sheets up taut on the bed. The pale yellow bolster pillow is the ugliest thing I've ever seen, packaged on the ends like a big yellow hot dog. I smack it down on the mattress, smooth the bedspread out. I wiped down the bedside table, stacked the Look magazines on her side, and the bridge book she ordered. I straightened the books on Mr. Johnny's. He reads a lot. I pick up To Kill a Mockingbird and turn it over.
Well, looky there. A book with black folks in it.
It makes me wonder if one day I'll see Miss Skeeter's book on the bedside table. Not with my real name in it, that's for sure. Finally, I hear a noise. Something scruff against the bathroom door.
Miss Celia?
I call out again.
I'm out here. Just want you to know.
But there's nothing. That ain't none of my business what's going on in there, I say to myself. Then I holler,
just gonna do my work and get out of here before Miss Johnny gets home with the pistol.
I'm hoping that'll draw her out. It doesn't.
Miss Celia, there's some Lady of Pinkham under the sink. Drink that up and come out so I can do my work in there.
Finally, I just stop, stare at the dough. Am I fired or am I ain't? And if I ain't, then what if she's so drunk she can't hear me? Mr. Johnny asked me to look after her. I don't think this would qualify as looking after if she's drunk in the bathtub.
Miss Celia, just say something so I know you're still alive in there.
I'm fine. But she does not sound fine to me.
It's almost 3 o'clock.
I stand in the middle of the bedroom, waiting.
Mr. Johnny be home soon.
I need to know what's going on in there. I need to know if she's laid out drunk. And if I ain't fired, then I need to clean that bathroom so Mr. Johnny doesn't think the secret maid is slacking and fire me a second time.
Come on, Miss Celia. You mess up that hat coloring again? I helped you fix it last time, remember? We got it back real pretty.
The knob turns. Slowly, the door opens. Miss Celia's sitting on the floor, to the right of the door. Her knees are drawn up inside a nightgown. I step a little closer. From the side, I can see her complexion is the color of fabric softener, a flat, milky blue. I can also see blood in the toilet bowl. A lot of it.
You got the cramps, Miss Celia?
I whisper. I feel my nostrils flare. Miss Celia doesn't turn around. There's a line of blood along the hem of a white nightgown, like it dipped down in the toilet.
You want me to call Mr. Johnny?
I say. I try, but I can't stop myself from looking at that red, full bowl. Because there's something else deep down in that red liquid. Something solid looking.
No.
Miss Celia says, staring at the wall.
Fetch me my phone book.
I hurry to the kitchen, snatch the book from the table, rush back. But when I try to hand it to Miss Celia, she waves it away.
Please, you call, she says. Under T for Dr. Tate. I can't do it again.
I skip through the thin pages of the book. I know who Dr. Tate is. He doctors most of the white women I've waited on. He also gives his special treatment to Elaine Fairley every Tuesday when his wife is at her hair appointment. Taft, Taggart, Tan, thank the Lord. My hands tremble around the rotary dial. A white woman answers.
See your foot on Highway 22 out Madison County?
I tell her as best I can without yakking on the floor.
Yes, ma'am, lots and lots of blood coming out. Do we know how to get here?
She says yes, of course, and hangs up.
He's coming?
Asks Celia. He coming, I say. Another wave of nausea sneaks up on me. It'll be a long time until I can scrub that toilet again without gagging.
You want a Coca-Cola? I'm gonna get you a Coca-Cola. In the kitchen, I get a bottle of Coca-Cola from the refrigerator. I come back and set it on the tile and back away, as far from that red-filled pot as I can without leaving Miss Celia alone.
Maybe we should get you up in the bed, Miss Celia. You think you can stand up?
Miss Celia leans forward, tries to push herself up. I step in to help her and see that the blood has soaked through the seat of her nightgown, stained the blue tile with what looks like red glue embedded in the grout, stains that won't be easy to get up.
Just as I raise her to her feet, Miss Celia slips in a spot of blood, catches the edge of the toilet bowl to steady herself.
Let me stay. I want to stay here.
All right, then. I back away into the bedroom. Dr. Tate be here real soon. They calling him up at home.
Come and sit with me, Minnie, please.
But there's a waft of warm, wretched air coming off that toilet. After some figuring, I sit with half my bottom in the bathroom, half out. And at eye level, I can really smell it. It smells like meat, like hamburger defrosting on the counter. I kind of panic when I put that one together. Come on out here, Miss Celia. You need some air.
I can't get the blood on the rug or Johnny will see it.
The veins on Miss Celia's arm look black under her skin. Her face is getting whiter. You getting funny looking. Drink you a little of this Coca-Cola. She takes a sip, says,
Oh, Minnie.
How long you been bleeding?
Since this morning,
she says, and starts crying in the crook of her arm.
It's all right. You're gonna be fine,
I say, and I sound real soothing, real confident. But inside, my heart is pounding.
Sure.
Dr. Tate's coming to help me see you. But what about that thing in the toilet? What am I supposed to do, flush it? What if it gets stuck in the pipes? It'll have to be fished up. Oh, Lord, how am I going to make myself do that?
There's so much blood, she moans, leaning against me. Why is there so much blood this time?
I raise my chin and look just a little in the bowl, but I have to look down again quick.
Don't let Johnny see it. Oh, God, when? What time is it?
5 to 3. We got some time.
What should we do about it?
Asked Miss Celia.
We? God forgive me, but I wish there wasn't a we mixed up in this.
I shut my eyes, say,
I guess one of us is going to have to pull it out.
Miss Celia turns to me with her red-rimmed eyes.
And put it where?
I can't look at her.
I guess. In the garbage pail. Please do it now.
Miss Celia buries her head in her knees like she's ashamed.
There's not even a we now. Now it's will you do it? Will you fish my dead baby out of that toilet bowl?
And what choice do I have? I hear a whine come out of me. The tile floor is smashing against my fat. I shift, grunt, try to think it through. I mean, I've done worse than this, haven't I? Nothing comes to mind, but there has to be something.
Please, Miss Celia says. I can't look at it no more.
All right. I nod like I know what I'm doing. I'm gonna take care of this thing.
I stand up, try to get practical. I know where I'll put it. In the white garbage pail next to the toilet, then throw the whole thing out. But what will I use to get it out with? My hand? I bite my lip, try to stay calm. Maybe I should just wait. Maybe the doctor will want to take it with him when he comes. Examine it. If I can get Miss Celia off it a few minutes, maybe I won't have to deal with it at all.
We look after it in a minute, I say, in that reassuring voice.
How far along you think it was? I ease closer to the bowl. Don't dare stop talking.
5 months. I don't know.
Miss Celia covers her face with a wash rag.
I was taking a shower, and I felt it pulling down, hurting. So I sat on the toilet, and it slipped out, like it wanted out of me.
She starts sobbing again, her shoulders jerking forward over her body. Carefully, I lower the toilet lid down and settle back on the floor.
Like it'd rather be dead than stand being inside me another second.
Now you look at here, that's just God's way. Something ain't going right in your innards. Nature got to do something about it. Second time, you gonna catch. But then I think about those bottles and feel a ripple of anger.
That was the second time.
Oh, Lordy.
We got married because I was pregnant,
Miss Celia says.
But it slipped out too.
I can't hold it in another second.
Then why in the heck are you drinking? You know you can't hold no baby with a pint of whiskey in you.
Whiskey?
Oh, please. I can't even look at her with that what whiskey look.
At least the smell's not as bad with the lid closed. When is that fool doctor coming?
You thought I was...
She shakes her head.
It's catch tonic.
She closes her eyes.
From a Choctaw over in Feliciana Parish.
Choctaw?
I blink. She is stupider than I ever imagined.
You can't trust them Indians. Don't you know we poison their corn? What if she's trying to poison you?
Dr. Tate said it's just molasses and water.
She cries down into a towel.
But I had to try. I had to.
Well, I'm surprised by how loose my body goes. How relieved I am by this.
There's nothing wrong with taking your time, Miss Celia. Believe me, I got 5 kids.
But Johnny wants kids now. Oh, Minnie.
She shakes her head.
What's he gonna do with me?
He gonna get over it, that's what. He gonna forget these babies because men's is real good at that. Get to hoping for the next one.
He doesn't know about this one. Or the one before.
You said that's why he married you.
That first time he knew.
Miss Celia lets out a big sigh.
This time's really the 4th.
She stops crying, and I don't have any good things left to say. For a minute, we just 2 people wondering why things are the way they are.
I kept thinking,
she whispers,
if I was real still, if I brought somebody in to do the house and the cooking, maybe I could hold on to this one.
She cries down into a towel.
I wanted this baby to look just like Johnny.
Mr. Johnny, a good-looking man. Got good hair?
Miss Celia lowers a towel from her face. I wave my hand in the air, realize what I just done.
I gotta get some air. Hot in here.
How do you know?
I look around, try to think of a lie, but finally I just sigh. He knows. Mr. Johnny come home and found me.
What?
Yes'm. He tell me not to tell you so you go right on thinking he's proud of you. He love you so much, Miss Celia. I seen it in his face how much.
But how long has he known?
A few months.
Months? Was he upset that I lied?
Heck no.
He even called me up at home a few weeks later to make sure I didn't have no plans to quit. Say he afraid he gonna starve if I left.
Oh, Minnie, she cries.
I'm sorry. I'm real sorry about everything.
I've been in worse situations. I'm thinking about the blue hair dye, eating lunch in the freezing cold. And right now, there's still the baby in the toilet that someone's gonna have to deal with.
I don't know what to do, Minnie.
Dr. Tate tell you to keep trying? Then I guess you keep trying.
He hollers at me, says I'm wasting my time in bed.
She shakes her head.
He's a mean, awful man.
She presses the towel hard against her eyes.
I can't do this anymore.
And the harder she cries, the whiter she turns. I try to feed her a few more sips of Coca-Cola, but she won't take it. She can't hardly lift her hand to wave it away.
I'm gonna be sick.
I grab the garbage can, watch as Miss Celia vomits over it. And then I feel something wet on me. And I look down, and the blood's coming so fast now, it's leaked over to where I'm sitting. Every time she heaves, the blood pushes out of her. I know she's losing more than a person can handle. Sit up, Miss Celia. Get a good breath now. I say, but she's slumping against me. Nuh-uh, you don't want to lay down. Come on. I push her back up, but she's gone limp, and I feel tears spring up in my eyes because that damn doctor should be here by now. He should have sent an ambulance. And in the 25 years I've been cleaning houses, nobody ever tells you what to do when your white lady keels over dead on top of you. Come on, Miss Celia, I scream, but she's a soft white lump next to me, and there is nothing I can do but sit and tremble and wait. Many minutes pass before the back bell rings. I prop Miss Celia's head on a towel, take off my shoes so I don't track the blood over the house, and run for the door. She done passed out, I tell the doctor, and the nurse pushes past me and heads to the back like she knows her way around. She pulls the smelling salts out and puts them under Miss Celia's nose, and Miss Celia jerks her head, lets out a little cry, and opens her eyes. The nurse helps me get Miss Celia out of her bloody nightgown. She's got her eyes open but can hardly stand up. I put old towels down in the bed and we lay her down. I go in the kitchen where Dr. Tate's washing his hands. She in the bedroom, I say. Not the kitchen, you snake. He's in his 50s, Dr. Tate, and tops me by a good foot and a half. He has real white skin and this long, narrow face that shows no feelings at all. Finally, he goes back to the bedroom. Just before he opens the door, I touch him on the arm. She don't want her husband to know. He ain't gonna find out, is he? He looks at me like I'm a nigger and says, "You don't think it's his business?" He walks into the bedroom and shuts the door in my face. I go to the kitchen and pace the floor. Half an hour passes, then an hour, and I'm worrying so hard that Mr. John is going to come home and find out. Worrying Dr. Tate will call him. Worrying they're going to leave that babe in the bowl for me to deal with. My head's throbbing. Finally, I hear Dr. Tate open the door. She all right? She's hysterical. I gave her a pill to calm her down. The nurse walks around us and out the back door carrying a white tin box. I breathe out for what feels like the first time in hours. You watch her tomorrow, he says and hands me a white paper bag. Give her another pill if she gets too agitated. There'll be more bleeding, but don't call me unless it's heavy. You ain't really gonna tell Mr. Johnny about this, are you, Dr. Tate? He lets out a sick hiss. You make sure she don't miss her appointment on Friday. I'm not driving all the way out here just because she's too lazy to come in. He walks us out and slams the door behind him. The kitchen clock reads 5:00. Mr. John is going to be home in half an hour. I grab the Clorox and the rags in a bucket.
Miss Skeeter, Chapter 19. It is 1963. The space age, they're calling it. A man has circled the Earth in a rocket ship. They've invented a pill so married women don't have to get pregnant. A can of beer opens with a single finger instead of a can opener. Yet my parents' house is still as hot as it was in 1899, the year great-grandfather built it. Mama, please, I beg. When are we going to get air conditioning? We have survived this long without electric cool, and I have no intentions of setting one of those tacky contraptions in my window. And so, as July wanes on, I am forced from my attic bedroom to a cot on the screened back porch. When we were kids, Constantine used to sleep out here with Carlton and me in the summer, when Mama and Daddy went to out-of-town weddings. Constantine slept in an old-fashioned white nightgown up to her chin and down to her toes, even though it'd be hot as Hades. She used to sing to us so we'd go to sleep. Her voice was so beautiful, I couldn't understand how she'd never had lessons. Mother had always told me a person can't learn anything without proper lessons. It's just unreal to me that she was here, right here on this porch. And now she's not. And no one will tell me a thing. I wonder if I'll ever see her again. Next to my cot now, my typewriter sits on a rusted white enamel wash table. Underneath is my red satchel. I take Daddy's hanky and wipe my forehead, press salted ice to my wrists. Even on the back porch, the Avery Lumber Company temperature dial rises from 89 to 96 to a nice round 100 degrees. Luckily, Stuart doesn't come over during the day, when the heat is at its worst. I stare at my typewriter with nothing to do, nothing to write. Minnie's stories are finished and typed already. It's a wretched feeling. 2 weeks ago, Abilene told me that Yule May, Hilly's maid, might help us. That she shows a little more interest every time Abilene talks to her. But with Medgar Evers's murder and colored people getting arrested and beat by the police, I'm sure she's scared to death by now. Maybe I ought to go over to Hilly's and ask Yule May myself. But no. Abilene's right. I'd probably scare her even more and ruin any chance we have. Under the house, the dogs yawn, whine in the heat. One lets out a half-hearted woof as Daddy's field workers, five Negroes, pull up in a truck bed. The men jump from the tailgate, hoofing up dust when they hit the dirt. They stand a moment, dead-faced, stupefied. The foreman drags a red cloth across his black forehead, his lips, his neck. It is so recklessly hot, I don't know how they can stand baking out there in the sun. In a rare breeze, my copy of Life magazine flutters. Audrey Hepburn smiles on the cover, no sweat beading on her upper lip. I pick it up and finger the wrinkled pages, flip to the story on the Soviet space girl. I already know what's on the next page. Behind her face is a picture of Carl Roberts, a colored schoolteacher from Pelahatchie, 40 miles from here. In April, Carl Roberts told Washington reporters what it means to be a black man in Mississippi, calling the governor a pathetic man with the morals of a streetwalker. Roberts was found cattle-branded and hung from a pecan tree. They had killed Carl Roberts for speaking out, for talking. I think about how easy I thought it would be, 3 months ago, to get a dozen maids to talk to me, like they'd just been waiting all this time to spill their stories to a white woman. How stupid I'd been. When I can't take the heat another second, I go sit in the only cool place on Longleaf. I turn on the ignition and roll up the windows, pull my dress up around my underwear and let the bi-level blow on me full blast. As I lean my head back, the world drifts away, tinged by the smell of Freon and Cadillac leather. I hear a truck pull up into the front drive, but I don't open my eyes. A second later, my passenger door opens. Damn, it feels good in here. I push my dress down. What are you doing here? Stuart shuts the door, kisses me quickly on the lips. I only have a minute. I have to head down to the coast for a meeting. For how long? 3 days. I've got to catch some fella on the Mississippi Oil and Gas Board. I wish I'd known about it sooner. He reaches out and takes my hand, and I smile. We've been going out twice a week for 2 months now, if you don't count the horror date. I guess that's considered a short time to other girls. But it's the longest thing that's ever happened to me, and right now, it feels like the best. Wanna come? He says. To Biloxi? Right now? Right now, he says, and puts his cool palm on my leg. As always, I jump a little. I look down at his hand, then up to make sure Mother's not spying on us. Come on, it's too damn hot here. I'm staying at the Edgewater, right on the beach. I laugh, and it feels good after all the worrying I've done these past weeks. You mean, at the Edgewater together? In the same room? He nods. Think you can get away? Elizabeth would be mortified by the thought of sharing a room with a man before she was married. Hilly would tell me I was stupid to even consider it. They'd held on to their virginity with the fierceness of children refusing to share their toys. And yet, I consider it. Stuart moves closer to me. He smells like pine trees and fired tobacco. Expensive soap, the likes of which my family's never known. Mama'd have a fit, Stuart. Plus, I have all this other stuff to do. But God, he smells good. He's looking at me like he wants to eat me up, and I shiver under the blast of Cadillac air. "You sure?" he whispers, and he kisses me then, on the mouth, not so politely as before. His hand is still on the upper quarter of my thigh, and I find myself wondering again if he was like this with his fiancée, Patricia. I don't even know if they went to bed together. The thought of them touching makes me feel sick, and I pull back from him. I can't, I say. You know I couldn't tell Mama the truth. He lets out a long, sorry sigh, and I love that look on his face. That disappointment. I understand now why girls resist, just for that sweet look of regret. Don't lie to her, he says. You know I hate lies. Will you call me from the hotel? I ask. I will, he says. I'm sorry I have to leave so soon. Oh, and I almost forgot. In 3 weeks, Saturday night, Mother and Daddy want y'all to come have supper. I sit up straighter. I've never met his parents before. What do you mean, y'all? You and your parents. Come into town, meet my family. But why all of us? He shrugs. My parents want to meet them, and I want them to meet you. But I'm sorry, baby, he says and pushes my hair behind my ear. I have to go. Call you tomorrow night? I nod. He climbs out into the heat and drives off, waving to Daddy walking up the dusty lane. I'm left alone in the Cadillac to worry. Supper at the state senator's house? With Mother there asking 1,000 questions, looking desperate on my behalf, bringing up cotton trust funds. 3 excruciatingly long, hot nights later, with still no word from Yule May or any other maids, Stuart comes over, straight from his meeting on the coast. I'm sick of sitting at the typewriter typing nothing but newsletters and Miss Myrna. I run down the steps, and he hugs me like it's been weeks. Stuart's sunburned beneath his white shirt, the back wrinkled from driving, the sleeves rolled up. He wears a perpetual, almost devilish smile. We both sit straight up on opposite sides of the relaxing room, staring at each other. We're waiting for Mother to go to bed. Daddy went to sleep when the sun went down. Stuart's eyes hang on mine while Mother waxes on about the heat, how Carlton's finally met the one. And we're thrilled about dining with your parents, Stuart. Please do tell your mother I said so. Yes, ma'am, I sure will. He smiles over at me again. There are so many things I love about him. He looks me straight in the eye when we talk. His palms are calloused, but his nails are clean and trimmed. I love the rough feeling on my neck. And I'd be lying if I didn't admit that it's nice to have someone to go to weddings and parties with. Not to have to endure the look in Raleigh Leafolt's eyes when he sees that I'm tagging along again. The sullen days when he has to carry my coat with Elizabeth's, fetch me a drink too. Then there is Stuart at the house. From the minute he walks in, I am protected, exempt. Mother won't criticize me in front of him, for fear he might notice my flaws himself. She won't nag me in front of him because she knows that I'd act badly, whine, short my chances. It's all a big game to Mother, to show only one side of me, that the real me shouldn't come out until after it's too late. Finally, at 9:30, Mother smooths her skirt, folds a blanket slowly and perfectly, like a cherished letter. Well, I guess it's time for bed. I'll let you young people alone. Eugenia? She eyes me. Not too late now. I smile sweetly. I am 23 goddamn years old. Of course not, Mama. She leaves and we sit, staring, smiling, waiting. Mother pads around the kitchen, closes a window, runs some water. A few seconds pass and we hear the clack-click of her bedroom door shutting. Stuart stands and says, "Come here." And he's on my side of the room in one stride, and he claps my hands to his hips and kisses my mouth like I am the drink he's been dying for all day. And I've heard girls say it's like melting, that feeling. But I think it's like rising, growing even taller, and seeing sights over a hedge, colors you've never seen before. I have to make myself pull away. I have things to say. Come here. Sit down. We sit side by side on the sofa. He tries to kiss me again, but I back my head away. I try not to look at the way his sunburn makes his eyes so blue, or the way the hairs on his arms are golden, bleached. Stuart, I swallow, ready myself for the dreaded question. When you were engaged, were your parents disappointed when whatever happened with Patricia happened? Immediately a stiffness forms around his mouth. He eyes me. Mother was disappointed. They were close. Already I regret having brought it up, but I have to know. How close? He glances around the room. Do you have anything in the house, bourbon? I go to the kitchen and pour him a glass from Pascagoula's cooking bottle, top it off with plenty of water. Stuart made it clear the first time he showed up on my porch his fiancée was a bad subject. But I need to know what this thing was that happened. Not just because I'm curious. I've never been in a relationship. I need to know what constitutes breaking up forever. I need to know how many rules you can break before you're thrown out, and what those rules even are in the first place. So they were good friends? I ask. I'll be meeting his mother in 2 weeks. Mother's already set on our shopping trip to Kennington's tomorrow. He takes a long drink, frowns. They'd get in a room and swap notes on flower arrangements and who married who. All traces of his mischievous smile are gone now. Mother was pretty shook up after it fell apart. So she'll be comparing me to Patricia? Stuart blinks at me a second. Probably. Great. I can hardly wait. Mother's just protective is all. She's worried I'll get hurt again. He looks off. Where is Patricia now? Does she still live here, or? No, she's gone. Moved to California. Can we talk about something else now? I sigh, fall back against the sofa. Well, do your parents at least know what happened? I mean, am I allowed to know that? Because I feel a flash of anger that he won't tell me something as important as this. Skeeter, I told you I hate talking. But then he grits his teeth, lowers his voice. Dad only knows part of it. Mother knows the real story. So do Patricia's parents, and of course her. He throws back the rest of the drink. She knows what she did. That's for goddamn sure. Stuart, I only want to know so I don't do the same thing. He looks at me and tries to laugh, but it comes out more like a growl.
You would never in a million years do what she did.
What? What did she do?
Skeeter. He sighs and sets his glass down. I'm tired. I better just go on home.
I walk in the steamy kitchen the next morning, dreading the day ahead. Mother is in her room getting ready for our shopping trip to outfit us both for supper at the Whitworths. I have on blue jeans and an untucked blouse. Morning, Pascagoula.
Morning, Miss Skeeter. You want your regular breakfast?
Yes, please, I say. Pascagoula is small and quick on her feet. I told her last June how I liked my coffee black and toast barely buttered, and she never had to ask again. She's like Constantine that way, never forgetting things for us. It makes me wonder how many white women's breakfasts she has ingrained in her brain. I wonder how it would feel to spend your whole life trying to remember other people's preferences on toast butter and starch amounts and sheet changing. She sets my coffee down in front of me. She doesn't hand it to me. Abilene told me that's not how it's done, because then your hands might touch. I don't remember how Constantine used to do it. Thank you, I say. Very much. She blinks at me a second, smiles weakly.
You welcome?
I realize this is the first time I've ever thanked her sincerely. She looks uncomfortable.
Skeeter, you ready?
I hear Mother call from the back. I holler that I am. I eat my toast and hope we can get this shopping trip over quickly. I am 10 years too old to have my mother still picking out clothes for me. I look over and notice Pascagoula watching me from the sink. She turns away when I look at her. I skim the Jackson Journal sitting on the table. My next Miss Myrna column won't come out until next Monday, unlocking the mystery of hard water stains. Down in the national news section, there's an article on a new pill. The Valium, they're calling it, to help women cope with everyday challenges. God, I could use about 10 of those little pills right now. I look up and I'm surprised to see Pascagoula standing right next to me. Do you need something, Pascagoula? I ask.
I need to tell you something, Miss Skeeter. Something about that.
You cannot wear dungarees to Kennington's, Mother says from the doorway.
Like vapor, Pascagoula disappears from my side. She's back at the sink, stretching a black rubber hose from the faucet to the dishwasher.
You go upstairs and put on something appropriate.
Mother, this is what I'm wearing. What's the point of getting dressed up to buy new clothes?
Eugenia, please let's don't make this any harder than it is.
Mother goes back to her bedroom. But I know this isn't the end of it. The whoosh of the dishwasher fills the room. The floor vibrates under my bare feet, and the rumble is soothing, loud enough to cover a conversation. I watch Pascagoula at the sink.
Did you need to tell me something, Pascagoula?
I ask. Pascagoula glances at the door. She's just a slip of a person, practically half of me. Her manner is so timid. I lower my head when I talk to her. She comes a little closer.
You may my cousin,
Pascagoula says over the whir of the machine. She's whispering, but there's nothing timid about her tone now.
I didn't know that.
We close kin, and she come out to my house every other weekend to check on me. She told me what it is you doing.
She narrows her eyes, and I think she's about to tell me to leave her cousin alone.
We're changing the names. She told you that, right? I don't want to get anybody in trouble.
She tell me Saturday she gonna help you. She tried to call Abilene, but couldn't get her. I'd have told you earlier, but...
Again, she glances at the doorway. I'm stunned.
She is? She will?
I stand up. Despite my better thinking, I can't help but ask.
Pascagoula, do you want to help with the stories too?
She gives me a long, steady look.
You mean tell you what it's like to work for your mama?
We look at each other, probably thinking the same thing. The discomfort of her telling, the discomfort of me listening.
Not mother, I say quickly. Other jobs, ones you've had before this.
This is my first job working domestic. I used to work at the old lady home serving lunch before I moved out to Flowood.
You mean mother didn't mind this being your first house job?
Pascagoula looks at the red linoleum floor, timid again.
Nobody else will work for her, she says. Not after what happened with Constantine.
I place my hand carefully on the table. What did you think about that? Pascagoula's face turns blank. She blinks a few times, clearly outsmarting me.
I don't know nothing about it. I just wanted to tell you what you may say.
She goes to the refrigerator, opens it, and leans inside. I let out a long, deep breath. One thing at a time. Shopping with Mother isn't as unbearable as usual, probably because I'm in such a good mood from hearing about Yule May. Mother sits in a chair in the dressing lounge, and I choose the first Lady Day suit I try on. Light blue poplin with a round-collared jacket. We leave it at the store so they can take down the hem. I'm surprised when Mother doesn't try on anything. After only half an hour, she says she's tired. So I drive us back to Longleaf. Mother goes straight to her room to nap. When we get home, I call Elizabeth's house, my heart pounding. But Elizabeth picks up the phone. I don't have the nerve to ask for Abilene. After the satchel scare, I promised myself I'd be more careful. So I wait until that night, hoping Abilene's home. I sit on my can of flour, fingers working a bag of dry rice. She answers on the first ring.
She'll help us, Abilene. You old May said yes.
Say what? When'd you find out?
This afternoon, Pascagoula told me Yule May couldn't reach you.
Law, my phone was disconnected 'cause I was short this month. You talked to Yule May?
No, I thought it would be better if you talked to her first.
What's strange is, I called over to Miss Hilly house this afternoon from Miss Leafolds, but she say Yule May don't work there no more and hang up. I've been asking around, but nobody know a thing.
Hilly fired her?
I don't know. I was hoping maybe she quit.
I'll call Hilly and find out. God, I hope she's all right.
And now that my phone's back on, I keep trying to call Yule May.
I call Hilly's house 4 times, but the phone just rings. Finally, I call Elizabeth's, and she tells me Hilly's gone to Port Gibson for the night, that William's father is ill.
Did something happen with her maid?
I ask as casually as I can.
You know, she mentioned something about Yule May, but then she said she was late and had to pack up the car.
I spend the rest of the night on the back porch, rehearsing questions, nervous about what stories Yule May might tell about Hilly. Despite our disagreements, Hilly is still one of my closest friends. But the book, now that it's going again, is more important than anything. I lay on the cot at midnight. The crickets sing outside the screen. I let my body sink deep into the thin mattress against the springs. My feet dangle off the end, dance nervously, relishing relief for the first time in months. It's not a dozen maids, but it's one more. The next day, I'm sitting in front of the television set watching the 12 o'clock news. Charles Waring is reporting, telling me that 60 American soldiers have been killed in Vietnam. It's so sad to me. 60.